Hello and welcome everyone again to my Tuesday conference call. Call I hold every Tuesday, 2 p.m. Pacific time, 5 p.m. Eastern time, to assist you in moving more freight, moving more of it, move it effectively, and moving it efficiently. Today got a very special guest on the call here today with me, Randy Hudson from Arlington, Texas. Randy, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Hey, Randy, welcome to the call. Really, really appreciate you, you joining all of us today and giving us some insight on what a successful freight agent does and doesn't do in moving their freight. Would you classify yourself as a successful freight agent?
I would classify myself as a successful freight agent.
You
I've
better.
Been doing it since 96. I guess. 90,
okay.
Yeah, 97. So I'm still, my rent is paid.
I was gonna,
car, you know.
I was going to say earlier, you better classify yourself as a successful agent. I would not have you on our call here if you weren't.
Right.
So,
well, and that, you know, a lot of people define that differently, but I absolutely do define myself that
way.
Well,
yeah. It's all a frame of mind, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Sure, certainly.
So you just said, Randy, you've been in this industry since 1997. What is that, 18 years?
Yeah.
18 years?
So.
Okay. Can you give us a little synopsis of your entry into this market and, you know, give us a few of the ups, give us a few of the downs, because let's face it, there are ups and downs in this market, isn't there?
There have been a few of those, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually came into this business. I worked at the airport, driving a truck hauling freight in the early
mid-80s. Which airport?
Dallas-Fort Worth.
Right there at Dallas-Fort Worth, huh?
Uh-huh. We unloaded planes. We did local deliveries, you know, a lot of that kind of thing. And so I developed a lot of contacts that way all over the country.
What do you mean contacts?
Freight forwarders, people that ship things all over the place, airlines.
Okay.
Those kinds of things. And I wound up getting moved into the office after a year or two of that and working international. So I got some international documentation experience that's helped me along the way. So I got to see a lot of different areas of the freight business. I then went to work for a trucking company that did more airport-to-airport kind of work in the air freight industry.
When you started off at DFW, Randy, did you work for one of the airlines or
I worked for a ground
shipping
company that... I worked for a ground handling company that had a contract with the airlines.
Okay.
The first guys that I worked with, Braniff Airlines, if anybody remembers that.
Braniff?
Yeah.
Got it.
They had gone out into bankruptcy and had reorganized in 82. When they reorganized, they did not set up their own air freight. They leased it out to one of their ex-directors, and I worked for him.
Got it.
Was the first guys that I worked for. And then I went to work for a trucking company that actually did line hauls for the airlines and the forwarders. You know, they'd do a nightly run to Atlanta, Chicago, L.A., those kinds of things. Road feeder service for the airlines, basically.
At what point did the freight agent profession come into your view, where you actually started considering doing it?
In 97, I was working for a forwarder, actually, international forwarder, and a guy that I had worked with at the trucking company had gone into brokerage, and I was actually using him for some excess truck freight that we had.
Interesting.
And he just mentioned to me, you know, with your contacts around the country with airlines and everything else, you could be doing very well for yourself if you wanted to come and join me. And so I did.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
And so was that
an easy transition into this profession, Randy?
I don't know if I'd call it easy. I had mentors.
Yeah.
I had a place to go to work, and I had people to help me, and I had contacts to call on. So in that sense, I was a leg up on someone starting from the scratch, you know, that has no idea of how the freight business works. I knew the terminology. You know, I knew a lot of stuff about it already. So that did help me, there's no doubt. But it's still, you still have to convince people to trust you with their freight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there were people that I knew for 10, 15 years that it still took me months to get shipments out of them because, you know, they had their ways of doing things, and there's other people involved in companies and stuff like that. So I wouldn't say it was easy, but I definitely had some experience already going into it that really did help.
Okay. Is there a particular industry that you cater to, Randy?
These days, I find myself doing mostly flatbed work with energy companies, and some of it being oil producing based and some of it being wind based.
Wind, really? So when we talk about wind, boy, I don't know if we see a lot of it now, but when I was actually driving a few years back, I saw so many propellers, wind turbine propellers being hauled down the freeways, along with the engines that you see on top of these wind turbines. Mm-hmm. Is there still a lot of that going on?
That is what I do. Now, the stuff that I do, though, actually is manufactured overseas.
Okay.
And comes into the port. They've got gearboxes that are maybe 10 feet long that weigh 40,000 pounds by themselves.
Yes.
And so I'll pick them up from the port and take them to the site distribution centers all over the country. And that kind of stuff. They come in different ports.
I would venture to say that a lot of that type of equipment goes to these far-off places where there's a lot of wind, but not necessarily a whole lot of people living there, Randy.
That's usually the case. Now, some of it we take to distribution centers that they have. Like, we'll pick them up at the Port of Newark and take them to the Chicago area.
Mm.
And then they distribute out of there to different places. Sometimes I handle that, sometimes I don't.
And then
there's stuff that comes in through California that goes off or into the, you know, the North Dakota sites and stuff like that.
Gotcha. Are most of those, or are those loads considered more of a specialty haul?
No, I mean they're very much a legal load.
Say the propellers, for example. I mean those is that what they're called? Propellers?
I haven't seen any propellers. What I've seen on all these, and I've been doing these for about 3 or 4 years now. What I've seen is mostly gearboxes, some other units that are, and like I say, those things are very heavy, but they're just not very, very big. I mean, they'll be 10 feet long, 5 feet wide, and,
right,
you know, 5 or 6 feet tall and weigh 30 to 40,000 pounds. They're huge,
one piece
per truck.
Seen quite a few of those truck stops.
Sure. So they'll come in a container, and they offload it as a container at the port and move it to a place for us, and we just go load them up and take them off, and they're, you know, it's just consistent, good, consistent business.
When you say overseas, are we talking like Germany? I don't envision stuff like that coming from China.
Well, actually, some of it does.
It does? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And I've also seen some of it come in from the U.K.,
Got it.
I thought was interesting when I first saw it.
Got it. Is that an industry that you eventually saw yourself in one day, or was that a gradual move to that type of industry?
I actually do these for the international forwarder that imports them.
Okay.
And so these are still some of the contacts that I made from my airport days and my air freight days.
Got it.
Which I still work with some, not so many of the airlines anymore. I used to do a lot of road feeder for airlines. There was a time when they started not paying very well, and I removed myself from that situation. But I still have a lot of contacts with the international forwarders that do need road feeder service, and they usually just don't have the expertise and the people set up in their departments to handle the inland trucking a lot of times.
Here's what's interesting about what we've talked about so far, Randy. You find yourself in this industry of moving freight as a freight agent. To me, this is technical items. Now, whether it's over high, over with, only you know that. However, you never would have gotten to this place had you not taken a job moving freight at DFW, correct?
Correct. I did not seek out this industry as much as just having a job and following a course of saying yes to certain opportunities is kind of how I landed into it.
And really, this, believe me, I am going something where I am going somewhere with this thought.
Sure.
But basically, you start off moving freight at the airport, but as you observed, as you looked around, you realized, hey, there are other opportunities available for me.
Right.
Especially when somebody approached you and said, hey, from what I recall, you had seen, or in some of your transactions, there were brokers involved in some of these hauls that you were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was using a broker for some of our trucking, in fact.
Yeah.
Who's the guy who suggested that I might get into it? You know, and then the jump there is just simply, are you ready to quit getting paid for your time and start getting paid for what you can generate and what you can do?
Give us a little more insight on those points you just made, Randy.
I can take a job and get paid a salary of $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year sitting in an office at that point in time by a desk and letting someone else reap most of the benefits.
Does that appeal to you?
Well, no. Obviously, it does not. At least I'm not there.
That does not appeal to you, trading time for dollars.
It does not appeal to me, trading time for dollars.
Okay.
It never really did. I've always kind of had that spirit about me and other things that I've done to always want to say, well, wait a minute, I can do that. And in fact, I worked at that other brokerage for only about 6 months when I thought, you know, I'm doing the selling. I'm doing the operations. I have to make sure my customers pay or the boss gets mad at me.
Mm-hmm.
And what am I receiving in return for that? I'm receiving a desk, a telephone. At that time, computers were really just coming into vogue as far as people really having access to them. We were on Windows 95. We could open one program at a time.
Wow.
The place that I went to work at was not even on the top edge of the current technology. And, in fact, I hadn't even thought about this in a long time, but when I first went to work there from the forwarder where we had computers and had, you know, state-of-the-art stuff for that time period, we were handwriting our load sheets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and not only were we handwriting our load sheets, we had to do it twice.
Got it.
Because the way they wanted it done was they had one that we wrote up as a rate confirmation to send to the carrier, and then we had another form we had to fill out with all the same information on it to hand in to the office for billing purposes and accounting and that kind of thing. So you were handwriting. I mean, it might take you 10 minutes to write up a load.
Okay. Okay. Again, we're going back close to 20 years, Randy.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have quite a few new individuals on the line here, folks that are interested in getting involved in the industry or have just started in the industry. What type of initial advice would you give to these folks? Because from my experience and possibly yours as well, folks come into this industry with visions of grandeur, thinking that customers are just going to fall in their laps. Is that the case with you, Randy?
It was not the case with me. I had a lot of contacts that shipped stuff.
Okay.
And it was still a lot of work. It still took me a number of months before I was making my commission. In other words, they gave me a base to start to help me get started. And it took me probably 2 or 3 months to the point that my commission was breaking that and I was no longer on any kind of a draw.
Okay.
And that was, like I say, I knew the terminology. I knew how the trucking worked. I had a lot of contacts in the business, but it still takes some time to get people to trust you with their freight. It's one thing to have a friend. It's another thing for them to trust you with their freight. And for somebody brand new that knows nothing about this, and I've got a few of them now, and I've helped a few guys get going in this, not as many as you have, but a few. And the first thing I notice is, somebody will get started, and they'll think they can be making a full-time living in 30 days. And my advice to everyone I ever talk to about this is, if you don't have your living expenses covered for at least 6 months, don't try it on your own. Go get a job somewhere like I did. Go be a dispatcher and learn the business. If you don't have a cushion of money set aside, because people do this at different levels and different speeds. But I've seen and trained and spent my own personal time on people who would do it for 3 months. And they'd start to generate just a little bit, but it wasn't enough, and then they'd get frustrated and give up. And I think you have to have a real realistic approach about it.
What, in your opinion, Randy, at what point is a good or an agent that's really putting forth the effort, at what point do you feel he's going to be successful? 1 month, 3 months, 5 months, a year? I mean, this is somebody that has a little bit of experience, okay, starts off.
Yeah.
And then, you know, takes tools, takes training, applies it. You know, at what point in that starting time frame do you feel he can feel comfortable in saying, hey, GM, I've got enough action going on here?
Yeah. Well, everybody has their own expenses that they need to make, but aside from the money part, what I would say about that is that within 1 to 3 months, I think that somebody can tell if they're going to be long-term and successful in it.
Okay, so
if they're generating some sales, if they've got a process down where they're calling on customers and they're calling on prospects and they're turning some of those into sales, even if they're not fully supporting themselves off of it yet monetarily, they've proven to themselves that they can do the work. Because the work of this is the hard part sometimes, and you may agree with this, but especially if you're starting off by yourself, not everyone is equipped with the tools to get up and go to work every day when it's just in their bedroom.
Or in their front living room or somewhere like that.
Where if you're working from home by yourself, it can be a trap.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I just need to run the store for a minute. Oh, I need to go out and mow the yard real quick.
A lot of excuses to leave your desk.
There is. And you got to go in your office every morning just like you work for somebody else. You got to go in your office every morning, sit down, and do your work all day long.
Wow. Excellent points, Randy.
That's the main success to me is that you got to be able to work on your own.
So good point. Between month 1 and 3, that gives you an idea of, hey, I can do this.
Sure.
And I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
That's just the learning process of
month.
What's that, Randy?
I was going to say, even if you're only selling, you know, $10,000-$20,000 worth of revenue a month, you've proven to yourself that you can do it. Now it's just a process of duplication.
Now it's duplication. So in my just based on what you were saying, month 1 to 3 is, hey, apply the tools, apply the training, and realize that you've got this. That, hey, I can do this. But really, as far as the income is concerned, tell me if I'm wrong. Month 3 to 6, where you realize, okay, I'm getting this down and I'm getting my bills paid initially. Now, obviously, after 6, it starts taking off, provided you keep your system up and running,
right,
and churning.
Sure.
Does that sound correct to you?
No, I think it does sound correct, and that's why I recommend 6 months of living expenses, because you can know in 1 to 3 months, but you may not have your income up there yet. Depends on what you need to make to live also.
Okay.
You know, somebody might be able to live on $40,000 a year, somebody else might need $100,000, so therefore you have a big difference in what they need, you know,
okay,
to get up to where they want to be. Most people that go into this, though, in my experience, they're not looking to make $40,000 a year. If they were doing that, they'd just go get a job.
Absolutely.
Right, so people are looking for high earning.
Okay.
Like you said, it looks like a genie in a bottle. It's high earnings just for sitting around and making a few phone calls. Well, that's not exactly the way it works. But there is a very, very large high earning potential in this. Guys with no college education that get good at this, you know, you'll be living amongst doctors and lawyers in your neighborhood because you can afford it. There's just that kind of potential, but you have to do the work and you have to continue to do the work.
Excellent points, Randy. So basically, let's talk about year 1, year 2, year 3. I mean, what can you conceivably make in this profession? Say that you're working on yourself, or working by yourself on your own in your office with determined dedication, persistence, and determination.
I've always used the rule of $1 million per person of sales per year. Now, a person can do more than that.
Absolutely.
However, as a base point, and a lot of, you know, that's where a lot of brokerages, you know, ask you to be when they start talking to you. But I always figured if I could generate $1 million per person in my office, everyone would do well. And certainly you could do more than that. I did more than that by myself last year.
Absolutely.
And can continue to do more than that. However, when you get to that point, then you get to make the decision then of how far do you want to go. Are you now ready to, because you can afford to, are you now ready to get somebody to start helping you dispatch while you bring in some more accounts, maybe get you a little office somewhere for $300 a month and pay somebody, you know, $10-$12 an hour to help you dispatch, and get that second million going. And pretty soon you got, you know, 6 million and 5 people helping you, and you even get to take a vacation every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Attaboy. That sounds good. So how do you do that? How do you get to that point? I mean, just give us a little insight. Give us a little insight, Randy, of how you would build your business up to that point. Give us a normal day. Say you're into this month 2, month 3. What's your day looking like?
Well, your day obviously has to go to take care of what you have in front of you as far as your current loads, setting them up, booking them, check calling, and that kind of thing. And then the very, very important part is that you have a system of some type set up that when you're not doing that, you can immediately go in and make calls on new accounts, looking for prospects, whether, you know, depending on how you choose to do that, you're looking for prospects and talking to prospects about more freight. I've done some things incredibly correct in this business, and I've done some silly things in this business sometimes.
Give us an example of
give
us an example.
Both.
Give us an example of what you've done correct.
We started our office in the spring of 1998, me and a partner who also had some accounts. We were already doing brokerage for commission, and we started our first agency. We actually started the first agency of a broker. It was a brand-new brokerage that wanted to start. We were their first office.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 1998. By 1999, we had hired two people. By 2000, we did over $6 million in sales with five people total within 2 years of working hard. Now, here's the thing. We had a lot of accounts already going, and in those days, everything was booming. I don't know that we made a lot of sales calls in those days because we got so much by referral that we were just booking freight as fast as we could.
And we're talking two semi, experienced freight movers, you and a partner, correct?
Okay. Right, and then three or four employees.
So it sounds like a lot of that business came from referrals. Is that correct?
It did.
Okay, all right. Give us an example of what you did not do well.
What I did not do well is as things began to change, well, first thing I did is I left that agency in 2008 and started a brand new company.
Your own company?
My own company, my own brokerage.
Got it.
After being an agent for 10 years under someone else, I decided that we could do better on our own, and I was putting hundreds of thousands of dollars into that corporate office, and I could do that on my own. I've got an accounting background, no problem. Well, kind of no problem.
Okay. Initially, no problem.
Initially, no problem in that I know what I'm doing and knew what to do. However, when you do all of that, you do turn your attention into setting up and organizing everything to do with a new business, and you're counting on the people that work for you to do the other things.
It's quite a bit different, Randy, when you go from agency office to freight broker office. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree. Now, it was kind of a confluence of different factors. Had the business kept booming at that point, it wouldn't have been an issue.
Right.
However, remember that I just said 2008.
Yeah, 08. That was
so just as I got my authority and put all the money up to start doing this on my own, accounts started going away, prices started dropping. There were people moving truckloads out of Dallas for 75 cents a mile.
Yep.
All over the country.
Yep.
Customers went out of business on me. I had accounts that I'd been doing business with and knew personally for 15 to 20 years that went out of business, costing me tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so all this happened all at once. What I did that was incorrect that I could go back and look at was that I allowed myself not to be the sales face of the franchise. What I mean by that, I wasn't constantly doing more sales work to bring in new business. So as those customers dropped off, you can't wait until the economy is bad to make new sales calls. The guys that made it through that were making their calls before that.
Right.
So what I consider my mistake in that process was that I allowed myself to get turned away from sales and making sure that the revenue was good while I was doing the other business. And, yeah, it was a confluence, but it was still my responsibility and certainly could have come through it that way.
Absolutely. Because when you have your own brokerage, you're dealing, I mean, half of your time is just dealing with, I shouldn't say half, but a lot of that is just dealing with government regulations.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole different ball game when you actually open a brokerage office.
Sure.
And, yeah,
and the money
your
and the credit and the qualifying of trucks and, you know, all of that. So.
Yeah, oh, gosh. I mean, not to get off on another topic, but what is your preference, to be selling as an agent or to be running your own brokerage?
Well, I'm an agent now, and I've been asked would I ever go and start it on my own again, and I don't know that I would. I never say never, and I different situations are different. However, having been through what I've been through, And having worked with the corporate office of the first guys that we set up and seeing everything we had to do, and things have even gotten harder since then, legal-wise, boy, your truck selection process better be on point right now or they'll put you out of business in one lawsuit, you know.
Absolutely.
So the corporate office means even more these days than it did back then. And so my preference right now is probably, you know, if I want to make more money, I don't need to take the money that I'm giving corporate. I just need to sell more.
Absolutely.
You know?
So really, it comes down to what you're better at. Are you better at administration? Okay, then think about becoming a broker.
Yeah.
But if you're a broker, you better know how to teach your agents how to sell.
Right, and even if you are good at administration, which I am, if you take your time away from the other stuff and you don't have the right people in place, then it can still drop back faster than you would think.
Absolutely.
And the other part of that is that no one. I don't care what you pay them. I don't care how well you know them. I don't care what their background is. No one will ever care as much about your business as you do.
Absolutely.
No one.
There's one saying I have, and that is your customers will leave you eventually.
Right.
For whatever reason.
It doesn't matter.
They don't like you, bad economy, whatever it is.
They change traffic managers. Somebody wants to bring in their own people.
What happens
all the time. Companies change traffic managers,
oh,
and your contact leaves.
For whatever reason.
He wants to bring his own people in.
For whatever reason, your customers will eventually leave you. Do you agree?
Yep. I do agree.
That is why selling is a daily proposition.
Number one priority.
Number one priority is always connecting.
If you want to build your business.
And contacting the marketplace
if
your desire is to build your business and, in turn, pay your bills.
Right.
And earn a wonderful revenue stream.
Right. And it would probably be a good idea to clarify what building your business is, because if you're not growing your business, it's shrinking. There is no such thing as a plateau in business. That's another hard lesson that I learned.
You're either growing or you're not. Growing
or you're not.
Shrinking. Good point.
There's no plateau. You can't say, in other words, we got to over $6 million and I'm making, you know, way more money than I ever thought I would.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, it's very easy to relax and say, oh, well, as long as I just keep this up, I'll be good. Well, there's no just keeping that up. You know, there's an energy thing about it that you have to, you're either expanding or you're contracting. There is no middle ground.
So let me throw an example out there. A beginning agent, a real fresh new face. They go out there. They have made contact with a few prospects. They're posting their loads, waiting for the phone to ring, waiting to cover some of these loads. And then in turn, they say, I'm just going to post these loads here and cover as many as I can. And we'll see what happens after that. Not make contact with any new, prospects. Is that a correct way of thinking? Is that flawed?
It's flawed depending on the outcome that you're looking for. If the outcome is to continue in the business and to be financially successful in the business, it's a flawed outcome based on everything that we just talked about. Because you're going to not grow, and so therefore you're going to shrink.
Tell me if you agree or disagree. Okay. The average beginning agent will do well initially, then they'll start getting these rate requests from customers or prospects, let's say, because really a customer is not a customer until you actually provide a service and move their freight.
Mm-hmm.
Up until then, they're just a prospect. But
absolutely,
a beginner will, hey, I've called so many people. I'm getting these freight lists, and all I'm going to do is just post these loads and cover as many as I can and stop my connecting process. Would you say that that is a good way of thinking?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't recommend that to anybody.
What would you recommend in that area? Because, unfortunately, that's what happens a lot with beginners, Randy.
It does.
And it happens, yes, in that 1 to 3 month period.
And then the next step after that is, not enough people are giving me enough loads that I can cover, and so there must be something wrong with the industry, and this stuff doesn't really work, and so I'll just have to go do something else because I can't support myself.
You've heard it all before, just like me, huh?
If you look at training and helping people get in this business, you have probably experienced the same thing I have at least once, and that is that you spend months with someone and you don't charge them anything for your time, thinking that you'll make, you know, you'll get compensated after they get going, and then after about 3 months they say, this isn't really working out for me.
Or you never see them post loads anymore.
Or you never see them post
loads
anymore.
They are posting
your
are from
emails
two,
or your phone calls anymore.
Or the loads they are posting are from 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, you know what I'm saying.
Oh,
so,
absolutely.
So let's talk about the solution then, Randy. The solution basically is this. ABC, always be selling, always be connecting, always be contacting. Do you agree with that philosophy?
100%. 100%.
Don't ever stop.
Don't ever stop.
Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. I'm telling you that it probably cost me the brokerage business that I started in 2008 because I didn't understand that concept quite strongly enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I had my business. I had my core business that was bringing in plenty of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
But, boy, it can go away quick in the midst of a downturn like that, you know, especially.
Absolutely. And let's say, I mean, right now we're experiencing an upturn in the economy.
Absolutely.
Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
So one thing to focus on over the next several years,
Yeah. Don't
get lazy. Is that a good way of thinking?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's got to be about selling. It just does. In fact, I can tell you that a buddy of mine that also is in the business that has an agency, we were talking about it after the fact just about a year or two ago. And, you know, we were talking about what happened in 08 and 09. And, you know, he's like, yeah, we really struggled, but we made it through. But the only reason we made it through is because me and my partner were always selling all through that whole time period. So we had some accounts in the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when freight got cheap, you know, we still had some people that we could move some stuff for.
Mm. Interesting.
It's just critical to keep selling.
Is there anything else that you want to add on your checkoff sheet to say to the listening audience before we go to a little Q&A?
Know that there's a lot of very high rewards in this business, but you just like anything else that I've discovered in life, you get out of it what you put in.
Action reaction.
It's absolutely true.
You're only going to get out of something what you put into it.
If you want to make $500,000 a year for yourself in this business, you can do that. But there's a reason that it pays well. It pays well because not just everybody can do it. If it was easy, anybody would do it.
Isn't that typical of any profession, Randy?
Oh, I think so. I think so. I mean, now, there are professions that require much more education in a way, you know. But it's still a matter of action-reaction, as you said. What you put into it is what is the return that you'll get.
And let's face it, the more folks that you make contact with, the more folks you get in your pipeline, eventually those folks are going to require your service. Would you agree?
I would agree. I would qualify that with saying qualified prospects that are in
absolutely. Absolutely. But okay, let's talk about qualified prospects. Because one of the frustrations, if you're not aware, is, oh man, I'm calling all these people and nobody wants to give me their business.
Mm-hmm.
Well, think about it. When people call us, do we want to automatically give our business away to them?
Mm-mm. They're comfortable. You're interrupting their day. They don't know you. They have no reason to change. They've been doing business with their brother-in-law's friend's freight company for 20 years. Name it. We've heard it all.
But then going back, your customers will eventually leave you, won't they?
Sure. So you have to find some new stuff.
There's always something happening in the marketplace that's being shaken up.
Sure, and there's a lot of different ways, you know, I've seen a lot of different ways to do this process. It's a matter of getting a process that works for you. Some people will, and I know there's a big brokerage here in Dallas that this is absolutely how their business model works, and they're big. But they don't do any relationship selling. They have people dialing for dollars every day, making 80 phone calls a day,
mm-hmm.
just,
mm-hmm.
you know, just constantly okay. hammering the phones, looking for whatever priced freight they can get. They don't care, and then they'll hammer their carriers until they get it moved, or they'll move something for little to no profit just to keep, you know, it's a volume thing.
Yep.
That's one way to do it, and you know, you can be successful at that. I have never gone by that method.
Yep.
I've always liked the relationship selling method. I think people do business with who they know, like, and trust, and what you get out of that is a long-term relationship customer, repeat customer, rather than as soon as your price goes up 10% because of the market change, they go somewhere else.
Excellent.
Yep. So you got to determine what kind of customer you're looking for. That's what I meant by qualified.
Excellent points made today, Randy. Are you available for a little Q&A?
Yes.
Okay.
I can keep going for
okay,
a
so you're hearing the real deal here. This gentleman, Randy Hudson, has been in this industry 3 times longer than I have, folks. Sounds like we've been an entrepreneur for about the same amount of time, so we both understand the concepts involved in being successful. However, questions, comments, hit *6. Hit *6 for any question or comment that you want to add or ask.
Sure,
Mr. Randy
I got
Hudson
one.
Here.
This is EJ from down New Orleans. I was curious, where do I draw the line between being persistent and being annoying?
That's an excellent question, EJ, and we've all probably asked ourselves that a million times. Personally, I think that you're only annoying if somebody hangs up on you or you never get another opportunity, because
right.
the next time could very well produce a sale. The sale cycle in this business, I always say it's anywhere from 1 day to 10 years. And what I mean by that is that you may contact somebody today that just keeps telling you no. You know, 5, 6,
right.
everybody has their formula. You need 7 contacts. You need 10 contacts. You got to find what works for you. But following up with somebody to see if anything's changed, they may change traffic managers. You know, if you know that they're a company that ships something that you know something about, you know, as long as they don't file harassment charges on you, I think that you keep contacting them. I really do, because I've had people come back a year or two later and say, you know, I still had that card. You know, I know you called me 6 months ago and I kept telling you no, but I've got somebody, you know, somebody's dropped the ball on me. Here's
right.
your opportunities for those kinds of companies, EJs, when somebody drops the ball, and they will. Be ready to step in with excellent service.
And that's typically
service.
Would you agree, Randy? Would you agree, Randy, that's typically when we do get in and are able to prove our worth, because
yes.
somebody has dropped the ball on
many
somebody.
Times that's the case. They're having trouble finding a trucker, they've been lied to, and they finally find out they've been lied to, and you know, and they don't like it. And so that's where a lot of opportunities do come in. So if you don't stay consistent with following up, then you may miss that opportunity. Now, do you want to keep calling the same people every week and make those 100 phone calls of people that aren't responding? No, that's probably not a great use of your time. I have a way of looking at prospects, and if I've contacted them a few times and I'm really not getting anywhere, I'll put them on a 3-month or a 6-month list, and I'll look them back up on LinkedIn. I'll look up their website again, see if I see a different traffic manager, and just see, you know, where they are. Or maybe I get somebody that I run into that is in a certain field that I can introduce them to and make a contact that way, where I can actually help them help their business, is a good way to make contact sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many different ways to do it. But I don't think you ever write anybody off if they look like a qualified prospect, in the sense that they ship something that it really helps if you know a little something about what they ship, I think. And if you see that they have loads that you think you can be competitive on and all that, I think you keep trying, even if you put them on a long-term list after the first 5 or 6 contacts.
Okay.
Again,
does that help you, EJ? Is that what you're looking
definitely,
at?
Yeah, it definitely does. It definitely does.
Yeah. It also boils down to the type of system that you develop internally as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it boils down to your personality. You know, how many objections can you take? Because let's face it, you're going to hear them.
Good point.
I did telesales for a little while. If I've heard any objections, it was definitely to that.
I would agree.
I also want to ask you, I don't want to block anybody else out, but I was also curious, if it's possible, would it be better to make face-to-face relationships? Because I live down here in New Orleans. I'm at the port of New Orleans, and there's tons and tons and tons of warehouses all around me. Would it be better, or could it be harmful, you know, to actually make face-to-face relationships?
I don't think it can be harmful, and I think if you can get to know somebody face-to-face, again, people do business with who they know, like, and trust. So if you can
right.
if you can go out and meet them and gain their trust that way, that's a great thing. Now, here's the other side of the story. How long does it take you to go see a few people that way, and how many people can you visit with on the telephone?
Right.
I started my business and never met my customers. I was doing business with people all over the country I never met.
The reason why I asked if it could be harmful is I'm not sure if how often loads are dropped, you know, if that's something that might even be out of my hand, and if they know me personally, and that's something that's out of my control, if they got a bad taste, where if it was just over the phone, I could circle back around, and maybe they never, you know, they just forgot who I was and picked that client back.
I don't think that approach is positive.
Here's a good answer for you, EJ. Okay. I teach from your desk.
Mm-hmm.
You won't hear me talk about physically getting up and go visiting
mm-hmm.
people. I put enough things into our system where your face and your voice is known to your customers.
Yeah.
Because
and another thing that can help that is whether social media or however you present yourself on LinkedIn and stuff for them
absolutely.
To go find when they Google you, because they will Google you.
Mm.
And that's
absolutely.
How people get to know people in this day and age. And here's the other deal with that, especially around the freight docks and stuff, is the security has changed so much. Half the time you go out to those places, you can't even get in a door.
Yeah. Yep.
You can't even get in anymore.
Yep.
So it's really just driving around wasting gas.
Yeah,
and a lot of time.
I know the social networking. That's a big part of Mr. Key's videos and things like that. So
once you make a prospect and you have a little bit of that, you know, meeting them face to face, I think is a positive thing for long term relationships. But certainly, you don't need that to do this business at all.
EJ, great questions. Great questions. Let's see who else has a question for Randy. Hit *6, guys. But that was a great question, Randy. Would you agree? I mean,
oh, absolutely.
My feeling is you develop the skills to make as many contacts as you can from the comfort of your home.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another thing, Randy. You're probably sitting around in shorts and sandals right now, aren't you?
Pretty much. That's if I wore any shoes.
Do you have a tank top on?
I got a tank top on. I got shorts and no shoes. Oh, and
so right now you have a tank top on. You got shorts on and no shoes.
Right.
Wow. I'm not far from you. Who's got the next question for Randy?
I got a question, Ted. This is Dana from Jersey.
Dana, welcome
Randy?
To the call. This is Dana from Jersey City, New Jersey. Randy.
Yeah.
All right.
Randy, Ted has been great. Teaching me, but I heard you say a couple of times that you was familiar with a lot of industry, and when we are calling prospects, sometimes we're unfamiliar with. You know, you can go on the internet and look up and say, okay, they dealing with pipes. And although you don't always know the ins and outs of the pipe industry, do you not proceed with the customer or the prospect, or do you just try to stay in the lane where you feel more comfortable? Like you said that you was working out at the airport, and a lot of the things you learned over the years of just working, coming straight into the business, you don't necessarily have a idea of what you know and what you don't know. So, like, is there any way that you can say, okay, I could specialize in this area, not knowing that if you're qualified? Because I had a prospect on the phone earlier, and he was very interested in giving me a shot. But then he asked me about a certain shipment, and I really didn't have no idea what the shipment was. I could have just went off base off of what he said and said something, but I didn't want to say something that was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said, I was honest and said that I was unfamiliar. So he didn't want to deal with me just based on, because I didn't have no knowledge of that particular shipment.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's also a great question. And I would say that just because you don't know about an industry now doesn't mean you can't learn. I would never stop looking at that. And you can actually, if you can get one shipper in that industry, then you start learning really well. In that instance of that you're describing, I would never try to act like I know something I don't know, because then it makes you look like you're just trying to sell something. You just want their money. You could care less about their freight. And that's not generally how you build long-term relationships. So I think you did the right thing saying you don't know, but what you might try to do is phrase it in a different way that gives you a chance to go find out. You might try to phrase it as, you know, I've done some similar stuff, but I'm not exactly sure about that, but I've got a guy that works in my company that does a lot of that stuff. And let me get with him and get the answers that you need and see if that might help you smooth it over a little bit so that you don't have to just, you know, run the guy off by saying, well, I don't know anything about that. But at the same time, you don't have to misrepresent yourself as knowing something you don't know, because if you do that, a lot of times down the road, you're going to get caught at it.
Yeah, that's
Dana,
what I was
when
afraid
ask,
of.
When they ask another question, you know.
Dana, did
I talked myself
the,
into
that
a job one time a long time ago.
Info.
I didn't know anything about it. You know, you get exposed real quick if you start.
Did I get his contact info?
Yeah.
No, he won't give it to me because he right. asked me.
But so
he asked
basically
me.
No. The answer is no. Is that correct?
Huh.
No, okay. I didn't get his info.
Okay.
No, I
right.
didn't get it.
All right. Okay. All right.
So it sounds like that might have even been his question that he used to ask people when they called on him to see if they knew what they were talking about.
Yeah.
So,
that,
you may, so here's what you can learn from that, Dan. You may try him again later if you can find out the answer to it. Call him up and
okay.
say, hey, now I know what you were talking about.
There you go,
Dan. I got a guy that works in my company that works with me
okay.
that does this all the time that helps me.
All right.
And
thank
even
you.
If that doesn't work with that guy, it might work with the next one.
All right.
Learn something from it and for the next guy.
Okay.
Great question, Dana.
Thank you.
Great question. Who's next with a question for Randy? It's star six, guys. Who's next? Excellent information you're giving out here, Randy. Really, really appreciate it.
This is Blake from Coral Springs, Florida.
Go ahead, Blake.
Hey, Blake.
What's the best way to stand out as an agent within this industry?
The question is, Randy, what is the best way to stand out in this industry?
So you're talking about setting yourself apart because there's so many people you're competing with, right?
Correct.
So in order to stand out, to me, you have to find your identity in the business and stay with that. Here's what I mean by that. Ted mentioned earlier with the kind of freight that I move sounds like it was kind of specialty stuff, even though it wasn't oversized or anything. And I think what he meant by that, and I'm going to say that he's right, is that it requires you knowing the customer's product and you making sure that they don't have to worry about it. So here's how I set myself apart is my service, okay? I set myself apart because you just tell me what you have to move, and I'll handle it for you. You can sleep. You can not have to worry about it because if something's going wrong, I'm going to let you know before it happens. So you got to find something to hang your hat on that you can set yourself apart with. To me, it's always service because there's so many people in this business that don't communicate and follow up properly, has been my experience. And so those ends that I've gotten have been when someone says, I'm tired of trucks not showing up on time. They can't ever tell me where they are, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an account actually on the oil end of the energy producing thing that I worked on for a couple of years that I got consistently last fall. And the way I did it was they'd give me one or two shipments every once in a while, but I knew that there were other guys getting a lot more. But I never could. The guy that was running the thing, there was a lady sales rep for this other company. You know, there was just all this stuff going on. I just couldn't break the mold and get a lot of freight out of him. I was getting a little piecemeal shipment here and there. So every shipment I got, I started inundating him with email check calls. This was stuff going to Canada and North Dakota out of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started sending emails twice a day with check calls, I would talk to their consignees, make sure they knew when the trucks were coming in. I would include them on emails. I just inundated them with information about their shipments. And after about 6 months of that, they're like, we're just going to give it all to you.
I was going to say, those are emails.
This guy was cheaper. They were running the loads cheaper for them. But if they can't count on the load getting there when their crew needs it, it doesn't matter what the cheapness is.
Yeah.
It's not cheaper. It's just a cheaper load. It's not helping their profitability. And I always try to look at it as helping a company's profitability rather than running a cheap load.
But basically, on any load you move, Randy, any load you move, you go the extra mile to stand out above whoever else could do it as well.
Right, and I think that is how you set yourself apart, Blake, is that you have to have that. To me, it's service. You may find it something different for you, but service is a great place to go because
there's plenty out there
that don't do that.
Yeah, you really don't have control over the trucks. You don't have control over the drivers. They're going to do what they do, but you do have control over information.
Mm-hmm.
And great point. The more information you share with your prospect or with your customer, I mean, the better it is.
And people will pay you more than they'll pay another guy.
I'm a big fan of contact. I mean, the more they hear from you, either a phone call or an email, the better it is, especially if it's positive information.
Sure.
But information nonetheless, just telling them, hey, you know, a load got picked up, ETA is tomorrow at noon.
Yep.
I mean, that's information.
And they don't have to ask for it.
But here's the thing, Randy.
For me.
But let's face it, Randy. I believe Blake is more of a beginner type. Is that correct, Blake? Blake? I don't know where Blake went, but I believe...
Well, I guess
Blake
he didn't like my answer.
I believe Blake is more of a beginner, so he's I think his question is based on how do you stand out in the beginning? Real quick answer, what would you say? How do you stand out when you're just getting into this profession, Randy?
I think the answer is the same, Ted. I think it's the service that I create. It's the relationship that I create.
Well, again, just...
What's the other way that you can stand out, trying to give them a cheap price?
You stand out by getting on the phone and connecting,
sure.
connecting, building your contact list. That's how I would say it initially.
Sure.
That's how you stand out. Stand out by connecting, follow up, because just by following up, that is standing out. Because on average, the average salesperson will drop a prospect after three tries.
Yeah.
On average salesperson will drop a prospect after three tries. So really, just stand out by going from the fourth try to the umpteenth and 50th try.
Sure.
I mean, that is standing out initially.
Sure.
So,
I'm sure that we all obtained a shipment just by being persistent in that way. You know, it's like, okay, well, this guy's been bugging me for 6 months, once a week. I'm going to give him a try.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely. One last question for Randy. Who's got it? Hit star six. Who's got the last question for Randy? Again, really, really appreciate your time today, Randy.
Glad to be a part of it.
I hope that this was just as much a learning experience for you as it was for us.
Always.
Who's got the last question for Randy? Hit star six. Last question for Randy. Hit star six.
Hey, Ted. This is Ash.
Ash? Go ahead,
yes.
Ash.
This is a question I asked earlier. Randy, hi. How you doing?
Hi, Ash.
I'm quite new to this. I'm about coming to 4 months into being a broker. I get a lot of customers who send me their lanes to look at and quote for them. They send me maybe 10 to 15 lanes at a time. And I end up with this sort of Excel spreadsheet in front of me, and they have the pickup area and the drop-off and so on. And then I'm a little bit kind of confused what the best way of pricing it is. Because the way I see it is I need to get a price. I get a lot of carriers calling me. I get various different prices from carriers. and at the same time, my price has to be competitive with other brokers. But at the same time, I need to have enough margin in there to cover myself in case of a problem, and that's how I see it. I'm just not sure how to get an effective process in place so that I could do 10 or 15 quotes for a customer and say to them, there you go. I'm just wondering,
Randy,
what you would
advise. Should Ash focus on getting a rate on all 15 lanes? I know you can envision what he's talking about.
I can.
Ash, you move a lot of food, correct?
Yeah, yeah. And right now I've got a lot of lanes that customers have given me to quote, and I'm just stuck with some. I don't know how to quote them.
What tools do you use to find out what that lane should be paying to a truck?
Several. One is the LDI RateMate.
Okay.
Okay, that sometimes is accurate, and then majority of the time it's either too high or too low. It's only one tool.
Yeah,
the other one is the 360 tool as well. I look at the spot rates, but the 360 tool right now for LDI is based on a three-month average rather than a one-week average. So it's normally quite old, and there's a big difference between RateMate and 360. The other thing I do is I will post a lane on LDI and then wait for calls. And if I'm kind of familiar with a lane, I'll start low and then see what kind of feedback I get from carriers. If I'm not familiar with a lane, I will start the conversation normally asking the carrier to tell me how much they would do it for and then start going down as other calls come in.
Mm-hmm.
And see until I get to a point where people will just say no, or and I've just gone too far down. But then the problem I've had is like for example, in a two-week period, I had one lane where I quoted a customer, and they wanted it moved like 3 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time when I quoted, it was fine. But then when he got 3 weeks later, suddenly it was
Ash,
like...
Ash, you're given quite a few samples here, or examples.
Yeah.
Just,
I'm trying everything, so I'm just trying to figure out...
Let me ask you a couple things that might help. So
These
10 to 15 lanes, are those loads that you know are ready date, or are they just asking you to put quotes in place for a six-month
Do they vary
period,
from
year,
day to day?
How long are they?
No, they kind of tell me. They kind of tell me, like, this is a lane, we do it, like, six times a year. This one, we do it, like, eight times a year on average. I have other customers where they're doing maybe three times a week.
Right. And they want a rate that they can depend on for the entire year?
No, I do try to explain to them that these are spot rates.
Right.
So,
right.
You know,
okay.
Price of petrol goes up. You know, there's all kinds of variances that can happen.
Do you already have a relationship with the people you're talking about and move some freight for them, or you just been trying to quote and you haven't gotten anything from these guys yet?
No, these are kind of like companies that I've been calling. I've been creating what I call rapport.
Right. So you haven't moved anything for them yet.
No, not yet. No, they want to see what I can deliver to them before they start taking it to the next level.
How do they decide how they tender their freight?
Well, at the moment, they're giving price. Yeah, a lot of them are just strictly on price. Yeah.
Do you know how many people they send those out to every time?
It depends. I have one customer that normally I would say between around maybe five brokers they probably have that they send it out to.
That's not too bad.
And then there's others who kind of have more.
It really depends. Let me see if I can cut to the chase and help you out a little bit. I've developed some rules over the years about customers like that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If I get an email list and they screw up and don't block who all they're sending it to and I see, you know, 10, 15, 20 different people on there, I tell them take me off their list. What I'm looking for is a relationship with a customer that I can then start to move their freight. I don't have to be exclusive to them, and I understand that people will use other people, but I do have to get some freight from them. I'm not going to be their third quote. You understand what I'm saying? I get these long list of quotes, and it's like from people that I haven't moved anything for in a year. I'm like, I need to talk to somebody. I need to get in a conversation with them and find out what their deciding factors are on these loads and how I can get into the door to actually move some of their freight, because just providing quotes is just giving them their third quote for their boss.
Hey Randy,
yeah.
Just bear in mind, as Ash said earlier, he's been into this 4 months now.
Sure, I understand that.
Yeah,
I do
okay.
understand that. And that's why I said over the years I've developed these rules.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
You know, I still think you have to have some guidelines on where you spend your time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if in other words, if you've done that for 3 months and you haven't received one load, your time might be spent finding somebody else, you know, calling on more prospects rather than staying with that.
No, I'm not in that position, Randy. This is someone that I've been giving a few phone calls to maybe over a 4 week period, and then finally they open the door to me and give me a chance, so they give me the lane to look at.
Then in that case, as far as coming up with the rates, you're using the tools that I would use, but in conjunction with those rate indexes, you also have a couple of other tools within LDI Freight that you can use, and that is to run LDI Freight history to see if other people within LDI are moving along that lane, and that will give you actual truck costs that people have been paying. It's a really good tool within LDI Freight that I use also. And
what's it called, Randy?
It's the
FreightMate?
No, it's LDI Load History.
Okay.
Carrier Smart. It used to be Carrier Smart Switch, but Smart Search. But whenever they changed everything around a couple of months ago, it's now called LDI Load History. So you can put lanes in there with mileage radiuses around your cities, and it will give you anything in the LDI system that's been moved along those parameters. So that can help you with actual moved loads within LDI and give you some carriers to call on if you need to. Okay? So then when I get all that information about all the rate indexes, and yes, sometimes they're different, sometimes they're pretty close, the next thing I look for is what does the capacity look like? If the capacity is real upside down, I don't care what the rate indexes say, I'm going to add some money to it to protect myself. If the capacity is pretty good in that area, then I'm going to either go with the rate indexes or an average of them or something along those lines. But you have to include that because the rate indexes don't always account for that stuff.
How do you measure the capacity?
Well, RateMate will show it to you is one way. Whenever you pull the rates on there, it gives you the negotiation strength.
Yeah, green.
Okay. So if you're coming out of a red market, going into a green market, you're going to pay more. If you're going out of a green market to a red market, chances are you're going to have a pick of more trucks. This is all about capacity in the market that you need a truck in.
Yeah.
So those rate indexes are kind of an average, but then you need to know about that. The other place you can look at that is the Transcor side has some tools on there that also show you freight levels.
So what was that?
On the DAT, on the Transcor, on the DAT software. The lane makers can help you find some trucks. If you look at hot states, hot market maps, some of that stuff under research, you'll find some other tools that will help you determine, you know, if there's 20 trucks to every load in that market, you better add a little bit of money to it or you're not going to get a truck. And it depends on what market it's going to. You know, if it's out of a tough market but it's going to another great market, then you're okay. And so there's a lot that goes into this and a lot of experience that rolls through my mind when I'm giving somebody a quote, that it'll take you a little bit more time to develop that, but you can use all of those tools in conjunction with the availability. I think it'll help you nail them a little bit more.
Perfect. Okay.
For whatever it's worth.
One more thing on that, if you can ever get any feedback from the customer about what they're paying, gold.
There you go. Of course, a customer like that is typically looking for, you know, a number, but here's my suggestion, Ash, plain and simple. You have moved enough loads, Ash, now where you have a general feeling of certain lanes and what those lanes are going for. I would just focus on lanes that are similar to that, and just respond to those lanes for the time being. Just like anything, to get your foot in the door. Don't focus on all 15. Focus on what you feel you're familiar with or comfortable with. If you're only going to quote 1, 2, 3 lanes, I mean that's fine. Because like Randy said earlier, you do have to focus on where you're going to spend your time.
And if you're not getting anything from them and you feel like you need to go a little bit skinnier and you can't find out where they're going with it and what they're paying and that kind of stuff, another thing you can do is look on Transcor at posted loads whenever you get those and see if any brokers are posting them with rates in them.
That can
help you sometimes. But it's okay to quote something skinny, and if it costs you a little bit more to move the truck to get a load out of them for that one load, all of us have misquoted something and had to spend most of our money just to get something covered because we committed
Absolutely.
To it. We've also quoted something and gotten it and found a truck for a lot better rate than we thought we could and made a lot more money on it. So it goes both ways.
Yeah.
So it's okay to get some skinny ones once in a while, especially with somebody you're trying to get them to
deal with. Just as long as you are moving forward.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Moving forward. Moving forward, okay. Moving forward.
Yep.
Ash, did you get some insight there?
I got a lot out of that. Thank you very much.
Great question. Randy, thank you so much for joining us today. Just a few quick announcements, as I normally say, guys. Any questions? Was somebody going to say something? Any questions involving topics for today, or if your desire is to join our highly competitive freight office, give me a call. I'm Ted Keyes, 626-309-9141. Any questions for those of you who are with us on our LDI freight system? That is a call for my wife, Maria, or our assistant, Marilyn, at the same number, 626-309-9141. Something real short and simple to wrap this up, Randy. What can you offer us as a bit of advice?
I think it all boils down to the concept of moving forward and staying in your prospects and continuing that. I think there's you just can't overemphasize that enough.
Excellent.
The rest
Excellent.
Of it can be done. You know, if somebody says, "What skills do I need to get in that business?" I always say, "What's your sales background?"
Mm. Absolutely.
It's not about Absolutely. Knowing what a truck looks like or anything else. It's about what's your sales background.
Interesting. We both look for different qualities in people. But here's what's required, the ability to take action and move forward. Would you agree?
Absolutely. That was the part about sitting in your house and knowing that you have to go to work.
Yeah. Randy, God bless you. God bless you all. We'll talk to you soon, Randy. We'll see you down the road.
Thanks, Ted.
You bet. Take care.
Talk to you later.
All right. Bye.